you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm your host, David Bloomberg, and because I'm playing the steal an intro advantage, I'm afraid my co-host Jessica Lewis doesn't get an introduction this week.
God damn it! That's so unfair. But wait, I didn't know that that was a thing. You can do that?
Yeah, turns out you can.
Aw, that's really sad.
Well, it can be, or sometimes lots of people applaud and then realize afterwards, oh, that was kind of sad.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, sometimes the game can just do that to people. It catches you off guard, and the end result isn't what you were hoping for. So unfortunately for Dan, he suffered a new introduction of an advantage to this game. And now people will be expecting it. So it really is unfair to Dan, I think, because he didn't even think to expect it.
That's right. And you know what happened? It went exactly as I predicted it,
which
I obviously knew the whole time.
Of course.
David, you're right! David, you're right!
Clearly, you were right.
Clearly. So,
isn't that your wrestling name?
The David, you're right delight?
Yeah.
Well, one of many, of
so
course.
It makes sense. No, it makes sense.
It all comes together.
Oh, what a crazy but fabulously fun episode.
It was. And, you know, it would be all too easy to just say the reason Dan lost was, well, as we've already mentioned, that he was hit out of the blue with a brand new advantage that he could not possibly have seen coming because, after all, he knew he was the target and he correctly played his idol.
Mm-hmm.
But as regular listeners know, it's rarely, if ever, that simple. And it certainly isn't this week. To get to the more complicated answer, we'll do what we always do. Take all the information we can find and go through a set of rules I wrote way back after the first season and have been modifying ever since. Again, you can find the David versus Goliath version of those rules at www.robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. Now, normally, the information we use includes what we saw on the show, interviews, web videos, and anything else that isn't a spoiler. And we pull that all together to figure out what happened. This week, with Thanksgiving and the delay in interviews, we won't have Dan's side of things to rely on, but we may have something even better. Sorry, Dan. in the form of an interview Josh Wigler did with Nick for The Hollywood Reporter.
Yes, it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, these interviews with players still in the game have been great. And this one especially provided a wealth of information about the past two votes. And I guarantee we will be pulling quotes out of that interview for weeks to come.
Yes. And I have to applaud CBS for deciding that, you know what, let's do this. Let's allow the players to talk during the actual playing of the game and do these interviews, because it really has been so incredible to get that backstory as the show is unfolding. And it really, I think, as a viewer, it gets you more involved and it gets you more excited, because now you can feel like you're involved in the process as it's happening, as opposed to watching it and then finding out after the show is all done, oh, that's what happened there. I think it's great. I love that they're doing it.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I understand that CBS would be concerned that spoilers get out. But with this kind of interview, you know, you have control over things,
right,
even with the regular interviews. I remember when I was doing interviews for my website, Reality News Online, and occasionally a player on the interview would say something they shouldn't say. And the press person would pipe in and say, can we not print that? Sure, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fine with me if we don't do that. I'm not going to ruin my relationship with CBS. And certainly they have a very good relationship with Josh. And so I don't really think you have to worry about that. I think it's in very good hands.
Yes. And that's why I think that their approach to it has been great. The players they've been picking have been wonderful. All things put together, it's been an incredible addition to the work that we have to do.
That's right. That's right. It has been very helpful, especially this week when we didn't have the Dan interviews.
Yes.
So, which reminds me, I guess I should have asked you how your Thanksgiving was, although I did steal your intro. So, you know, but I guess I'll ask anyway.
You did steal my intro. It was a great Thanksgiving. Thank you for asking. It was nice to be home watching this episode of Survivor and not being on the receiving end like I was a couple Thanksgivings ago, where I was the one going home with and my family got to watch that moment with me. But overall, no, it was quite nice. It's good to hang out with the family, eat way too much food, and just get to relax for a couple of days and then get right back into it. You know, work has been tough, but overall, good time.
Well,
I hope yours was as well.
Yeah, it was good. Got to see all the different families, including a couple of podcast listeners. Getting back, I was racing a winter storm, so that was fun. But
it's not good.
Yeah, well, I made it home, so I guess I won.
That's good. Well, I'm glad you made it home. That's excellent.
Me too. It would be hard to do this podcast from in a ditch on the side of the road. So,
oh my word, that would be horrifying.
Yes. So, all right. Well, with that past us, we have Thanksgiving. Now it's time for dessert in the form of this podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I will say that in Dan's mind, I think he was doing very well leading up to this point, because in a web confessional from episode 8, he rated his game 8 out of 10 and said his only mistake was not burying his first idol. He had said he kept good relationships with everyone and felt he belongs in the circle of great Survivor players. He furthermore felt good about making it to the end. Obviously, that didn't happen. But what about everything else he said? Now, you may have given away a little bit about your feelings on that. I heard some laughing there. But,
well,
you know,
I did giggle a little. And I think it's not because of what he's saying. I think it's the fact that Dan is one of those people who is so very proud of himself. And he should be. He's accomplished a lot. He's a successful individual. He loves his children dearly. He has a lot of incredible things going for him. And I really feel like that's what he exudes. He exudes that pride he has in himself. And I think he struggles with maybe being humble at times when it comes to this type of game, because it's a good thing he said this in a web confessional, but unfortunately it didn't just sit in web confessionals. I think Dan was very vocal about the pride he had in himself, which again, it's not a bad thing. But in Survivor, sometimes humility will get you a really long way.
Yeah, I certainly cannot disagree with that. And I'm sure we will get to that point. But, you know, what about the other things he said? Did his game rate 8 out of 10? Was not burying his first idol his only mistake?
No.
Well, okay. Let's answer those questions that, or at least we've already answered it. Let's face it. We know the answer is no. So it's time to figure out why Dan lost. The first rule, of course, is to scheme and plot. And so we'll have to get to some of those other things a little later. But I think that the question of is it his only mistake, we'll already start answering that here. Alex said in this episode that Dan was the least strategic of the Goliaths, and I tend to agree with him. This is linked to Dan's feelings about lying and backstabbing, and to be clear, he's very against it. Mm-hmm. As he said in his Ponderosa video, he tried to play a good, clean game, and he's not going to change who he is to play a game. He said he can't be a villain because that's not who he is or who he wants to be, and that's the first problem. I've been saying it in these rules for almost 2 decades now. Survivor is a game, and it has to be played as a game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to win, you have to put aside any thoughts to the contrary. But Dan also said you can be a good quality person and you should be able to do well. And yeah, you can, but not if you try to be that good quality person in the game.
Yes. Yeah. And even in episode 2, Jeremy mentioned that Dan is playing with his heart and no strategy. So the perception that he was providing to other players was just that he wasn't strategizing. He was playing the game as Dan. And that's, again, not a bad thing, but it's different when you are making decisions because you want to be true to yourself and kind of losing sight of the end game, you know, the end goal, if you will, that you want to win $1 million. And the only way you're going to do that, you might have to backstab and you might have to lie a little bit. And I think people now, in the way the game is played, they can accept that. The viewers get it. They understand why people do it. And you don't get hated on for playing the game. People are actually excited when you do. So I think he struggled greatly with finding that balance between being himself, but being himself playing the game of Survivor.
Yeah, I think he tried to have it both ways. In a web confessional for this episode, he said he wanted to look out for the Goliaths because that's what he does, you know, with his teammates or his coworkers in SWAT. But he also felt like he almost had to turn on them and look out for himself. But coming into the game, he didn't want to have to turn on people. He wanted to make one alliance and stay with it the whole game. He didn't want his kids to see him lying and cheating to get ahead in the game. He wanted them to be proud of him, and he didn't want them to think they needed to do that to get ahead in life. But as we explained just a few weeks ago, when Natalie took to Twitter and Instagram to say that she won, even though that she lost, there is a difference between real life and the game. The rules of this game not only allow, but frankly encourage lying and sometimes stealing, like stealing a vote.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw a pastor manage to separate the two and put his morals about lying aside in the most recent season of Survivor South Africa. Dan seems to be a nice enough guy, and it's hard to fault someone for wanting to be a role model for his kids. But again, players have to remember that this is a game.
And I do think that we've seen players in past seasons balance this very well, where they're still, I mean, Kim Spradlin, for God's sakes, was one of the most likable Survivor players ever. And if you talk to people in her tribe, they would say the same. But she still managed to win because she understood how to balance the two. She did have that tight alliance, and she had people who were willing to work with her. But at the same time, those were the same people that knew she would go to bat for them. And really, I felt so comfortable with Kim that I believe they said that she was the one that, you know, she would save their life if they needed to in one of their weird trivia games they played. You know, so I think that there is a balance that you can find. You can still have that I'm a good person and I'm going to play this game as a good person, but I'm not going to forget to strategize when I'm doing it, and I'm going to figure out how to balance it all out. And I think Kim did a great job doing that.
Yeah. And on the contrary, Dan, I think we saw symptoms of his aversion to this type of gameplay in other areas. As one example, he said repeatedly in web confessionals, I mean, I counted at least two, possibly three or four, that one main goal was to win seven challenges.
Yes. And what?
It seems like that was his bigger concern rather than strategy. And it reminds me of players like Ozzy, who are not lauded for their strategic abilities.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he was completely unconcerned about strategy, but it seemed his mind was focused elsewhere. And because of that, we had situations such as what Alec described to Josh Wigler in an earlier Hollywood Reporter interview after episode 7, when Alec said he felt like he could predict what Dan would do because he was so transparent.
Yes, and look, that's exactly what happened. You know, with the idol plays, I mean, people were able to predict what he was going to do because he was transparent. He was telling people. He was sharing information, things that you probably shouldn't share. You can pull a Davy and you don't tell anyone you have an idol. And then look what happens. You can wreak havoc because you play an idol and no one knows that it's coming. Whereas with Dan, everyone was expecting it. Everyone was expecting it. And for it, so it's unfortunate that he was unable to really see what he was doing to himself, because honestly, other players probably loved playing with Dan because, yeah, he was an open book. There was no secrets. There was no guessing. It was pretty like, this is what it is. This is Dan and this is the game. And I don't need to worry about him pulling a Davy because he's not going to.
Right, right. Now, a little bit of credit, I guess. Christian did mention in a web confessional for this episode that Dan was among the Goliaths coming to him and bouncing ideas off him, which I guess makes sense since they were both brochachos. But that seemed to be mostly social rather than strategic, though. In a moment, we'll get to one situation where Dan, among a few others, apparently did try to scheme against the Davids and it didn't go well. So let's go ahead into the second rule, which covers how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much. So we just talked about how Dan didn't strategize enough. But this is one of those cases where a player managed to have problems in both rules. It's rare, because usually we'll say, well, they didn't do it enough, so let's skip this rule. But no, he managed to have issues in both places. And the first and most obvious way he had a problem here was from the first episode, when we saw Dan create a showmance duo with Kara. He knew it was a bad idea. She knew it was a bad idea. Everyone watching knew it was a bad idea. And he did it anyway.
Yes. That was his kryptonite.
Well, yeah, I guess. And in an episode 2 web confessional, he even said he and Kara tried not to talk too much during the day to avoid being targeted. They talked at night when they cuddled.
Right.
I mean, I guess he thought this was better, but no. People notice talking and they notice cuddling.
They definitely notice cuddling.
Especially, there's just not much else going on at night. I mean, Elizabeth certainly did when the merge arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, usually when I talk about a player who was in trouble because of creating a strong duo, it's from the other players on their trot. But in this case, the trouble also came at him from his partner herself. And in this episode, Kara flat out said, Dan is a liability for my game.
Mm-hmm.
And she pitched the Davids on joining with the majority of Goliaths to vote him out, at least before that changed.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, the relationship that he developed with Kara, because it was quick. They bonded like right away and developed this showmance, if you will. And it's interesting because it's not like he was in a situation where he needed to share information with her, because clearly she had his back and he had hers. And so the fact that I know the first idol they found together, fine. He and Natalie or Natalia.
Well, sort of.
He said he was with the most beautiful girls when he found it. But the second one, definitely he was by himself, and he didn't need to share the information with her because they were already like close. It's not like he needed to win her back over, or he needed to convince her you can trust me and this is why. And I think that's one of the bigger problems we see in Survivor, is that when people have an advantage or an idol, they don't know when to use that information to their benefit. Like, if you need to get somebody back in your corner and you've got something like an advantage or an idol, that's a way to do it. But he didn't need to do that with Kara. They were already tight. They were close. There was no needing to shore up anything or make them bond even closer. They were already close. So I feel like he was excited and he needed to tell someone, you know, and instead of him realizing this is information, it's powerful information, I'm not going to tell anybody because I don't need to.
Yeah, I'll get into more of my thoughts on that when we get to the seventh rule. But you're
sorry,
right.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
No, hey, that's okay. You're excited. You know, you had to share that information. So, but yeah, you're right. And he overshared there. And at the same time, you know, just the showmance drew attention. Now, a second way that he had an issue here was an overall problem with the Goliaths. While the Davids were being sneaky about their targets, the Goliaths have repeatedly made it very clear that they were going after Christian.
Mm-hmm.
That allowed the Davids to have better offensive and defensive plans than the Goliaths did.
Mm-hmm.
If you know who the target is, you can plan for it. And the Goliaths were acting like, nope, we have the majority. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
And
I do love all of the walks on the beach where they show all the Goliaths, and it's in like multiple episodes where like they're having this walk along the beach. They're all, you know, big and strong, and they're, you know, it's so funny. It's so funny. And all the Davids are like huddled back at camp watching this happen. As they scheme and plot at the beach.
Right. So, like I said, it was a problem with Dan. It was a problem with the Goliaths overall. And finally, Nick's interview with Josh that we mentioned gave us another reason, which I alluded to at the end of our discussion on the first rule. Nick noted that one reason he targeted John the previous week, which is linked to this week, was that John, Dan, and Kara had lied to him by saying they were going to join the Davids in voting out Angelina. At the time, Dan had immunity, so John was the one to go. But not this week. By being part of this lie and getting discovered, again, he was scheming too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the one time he actually does some scheming and lying, and it comes back to completely bite him.
It did, too. Sorry, Dan. You should still lie. Just know when to lie.
Right. Exactly. And again, don't scheme and plot too much.
Right.
So the third rule we will move into now, it tells players to be flexible. As we mentioned in the first rule, Dan said he wanted to make one alliance and stay with it the whole game, which is pretty much the opposite of flexible, mm-hmm. especially if he wasn't making side alliances and plan Bs, which he wasn't. Dan said in this tribal council that the war between Davids and Goliaths was absolutely on. He'd rather work with the enemy he knows than the enemy he doesn't know. But this brings up a question. Well, actually brings up several questions. One, why doesn't he know them? And two, did he really try to get to know them and work with them?
Yeah, I thought that was really fascinating for him to admit that he didn't even know the Davids, really. I mean, how do you get this far and not know who they are? Even
right,
a little
and
bit.
He said it seems smarter to work with people you know and that you've built relationships with. Well, okay, but like he built a relationship with Christian and then he decided to target Christian instead of working with him. So, yeah, you have two things going on and, it just doesn't work. You know, either you need to get to know people and work with them, but then you say, well, I didn't want to work with people I didn't know, but then you're targeting one that you did. It's just so confusing.
You sound very flustered.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all wrapped up there. And then there was a whole discussion related to flexibility in this tribal council. Gabby tried to explain that someone is on the bottom of the Goliaths, so they could join the Davids and not be on the bottom anymore. Dan replied that they would just be at the bottom of the Davids instead, but that's not necessarily true. Working with the Davids or some subset of the Davids could put a Goliath into better position. Carl tried to explain that the bottom can change, but Dan was having none of it, saying it wouldn't change if you're in the minority on the opposite side. And again, he needed to see things in a different light, not as a Goliath in a minority, but as a partner working with Davids.
Yeah, he really had created such a strong relationship and friendship with Christian that it's like he was in such a great position come the merge. And I don't know why he let that fall by the wayside. And I don't know if it was because John, who was his other brochacho, was also very much this Goliath strong mentality. And maybe he was feeding off of that. And that's why they kind of let Christian fall by the wayside. But that was a missed opportunity for him to really stay in this game, because Christian is the type of person I think that can realize the benefits of keeping someone like Dan in the game. Obviously, you know, moving forward is as far as, if he's on your side and he wins immunity, well, he's on your side. And so you can at least kind of work with him as far as who should we vote out. There's a lot of benefits to keeping someone in the game like Dan, who's not necessarily a strategic threat, who could potentially be a physical threat, if you will, to help you further your strategic game, if you will, because he would be voting with you. So I really do think that was a moment where Dan faltered in losing that relationship with Christian so quickly. And I don't, maybe it was John that caused it, but I think that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. And on the flip side, you have Alec, who is saying things like, well, okay, he said it in a web confessional for episode 4, that he wasn't looking at the Swap Tribe as a Goliath versus David numbers game, but whether he could become part of a better alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they need to pay attention to the future for alliances outside their existing ones. Then at the merge, he said, you're naive to think going into a merge that things are going to stay David and Goliath. So it's like, keep doing your thing and think you're Goliath strong. I'll jump on board with the Davids. I'll forge those connections. Clearly, Dan was not thinking along those same lines. He was thinking Goliaths versus Davids. And he didn't form those bonds. He didn't make those relationships. He didn't even use the relationships that he did have.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunate.
Yeah. All right. So moving to the fourth rule, it tells players not to let their emotions control them. How do you think Dan did here?
That kryptonite was a problem for him, wasn't it? I feel like Dan really did kind of wear his heart on his sleeve. I mean, I think everybody knew where Dan was coming from. I think everybody knew how Dan was feeling in any conversation. I mean, you just look at the conversation that he had with Angelina when they ended up flipping the vote again at the merge, where it was supposed to be Christian, then it went back to Elizabeth, and just how appalled Angelina was with how he spoke to her. And I feel like it's because that's Dan. You know, Dan doesn't hide. He is what he is. He is who he is. And this is what he's thinking. And he's going to tell you. And it's not necessarily because he has ill intentions or he's mean. It's just that's what he was thinking at that moment. So that's what he was going to say. So, you know, I think that was a problem for Dan. I do think that I don't know if he's just an emotional person, but I don't think he's very good at kind of keeping things hidden and under wraps, including idols, you know. That kind
well,
of stuff.
Idols and relationships. And, yeah, I mean, even putting aside whether or not he kept it under wraps, just doing things to begin with. I mean, Kara saw from the beginning how the relationship could impact her game negatively, and she tried to calm things down. But Dan seemed to think they could have it both ways, as we already discussed in the second rule. Mm-hmm. But it went beyond that, as we saw his emotional reaction to Alec telling him at the merge about Elizabeth's plan to target him and Kara. Now, you already referenced, you know, what he said and how he said to Angelina, but no one really knew why Dan was so upset. Alec even told Josh that. Elizabeth knew she was on the chopping block and she was trying everything she could. So Dan was a perfect target. And Alec said he wasn't sure why Dan's reaction was to get so bent out of shape and run off and start doing what he was doing.
How about his reaction when they got back from tribal after the John boat, and how he sat on the beach by himself and he was all upset that no one came to talk to him for like 2 hours, but everybody else was talking? You know, I mean, yeah. It's one of those situations where, like, when Kara looked at him and she was like, well, you can go and talk to people. Like, she was like, that's okay. Like, you can do that too. And I do think it's just because he gets caught up in his emotions in the moment. And I it affects his ability to just kind of push through and say, okay, this is what I'm dealing with now. And this is what I have to do. Instead, he was kind of sulking, which I understand. John's his buddy. And that was, it was a sad moment for him, but that's when you really have to realize I got to kick it into high gear, because clearly there's some stuff going on that I am not part of and I'm not being included in, and I need to make myself be included.
Right. Absolutely. You know, that was one more symptom of his overall situation in terms of this rule. And it did help lead to Kara pushing for the Goliaths to turn on him, which led to her talking to the Davids about targeting him. Now, I do think that was almost certainly happening anyway, but it was one more example of how Dan's emotions got the better of him in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one more still, which is we have already talked about it, how conflicted he was about playing the game. He wanted to be loyal and never wanted to have to turn on people. And he said that the idea of turning on people was tearing him up. And no, you can't be torn up like that and allow it to affect how you're playing, because this is a game.
Yeah. Trust me, it's hard when you're out there, though. It does really tear you up, but you got to move past it.
Exactly. It can tear you up as long as you move past it.
Right.
The problem is letting it tear you up to the point that you don't move past it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on. The fifth rule discusses how players have to pretend to be nice and play the social game. Now, you already mentioned how he got emotional and talked to Angelina. So I think I already know, but what did you think of Dan in this regard overall?
Well, see, and that's, again, the interesting component of Dan, and I think you've already kind of touched upon it with the rule one and rule two, how he can be good and bad at both kind of thing, you know, where I think that socially he was a very likable guy. He created really great friendships. I mean, look, we have the Brochachos, which, by the way, that Ponderosa video, I have to give so just props. James Seal, you're amazing. The ending was hysterical. So if you haven't seen it, everybody needs to go watch that. But I think that that is a perfect example of how important making friends on the island was for Dan. And because he really seems to cherish the friendship that he created with John. And so I think socially, the relationships that he created were important to Dan. He had Kara, he had John, but he limited himself. I mean, and clearly he's mentioned that himself in one of his web confessionals when he's like, I don't even know who the Davids are. So he was this weird mix where he was like, I'm going to be really good over here with my bro Chachos and my Kryptonite and maybe a couple of, you know, other people who are part of the Goliaths, but the rest of you, you know, you're on the Davids. I don't really care. So it was this really, really strange mix where he was good with certain people, but not everybody.
Yeah. And so speaking of not being good with everyone, he had some moments that came across to many viewers, including, you know, the way he was talking to Angelina, came across to viewers and probably at least some of his tribe mates as, shall we say, chauvinistic.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the impact of that was on his game?
Oh, that's hugely detrimental to your game, because it's one of those situations where if you are perceived in any way, whether or not that's how you really are, perception is everything out there. And if the females are looking at you and feeling like you're chauvinistic, it's going to affect their desire to want to listen to you, to talk to you, to communicate with you, because they're going to feel like they're being talked down to. Even if that's not what you're trying to do, you know, and I don't know if that's the way he was, but if that's how you're being perceived, that's all that matters. Perception is everything in that game.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, you got to watch out for those, you know, the way you treat those females and those women too.
Oh my goodness. Women.
That is an inside joke for one person on Twitter. maybe like three people on Twitter. So anyway, yeah, I tend to think it obviously it wasn't good, but it didn't really impact directly on why he lost.
No, I agree. I don't think it did either.
But it could have contributed to his name floating around. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Once your name gets out there, it can have an indirect on how people start thinking about you.
Yes.
And, oh, well, his name's out there. Maybe we'll go for him.
Well, and, you know, and I don't really even know if this is the right place to talk about this, but the fact that Dan was even wondering at some point why he was a target and John wasn't, I think that could be part of the reason for that, because John really went out of his way to be friendly with everybody and to talk to as many people as he could. John was just likable across the board. And I'm not saying Dan's not, but Dan wasn't putting the time in like John was. And even Dan couldn't figure out why he was more of a target than John. And that could very well be why, because of that social game and because of how he was being perceived by other people. Whereas if you look at how John was speaking to everybody out there, it was usually just like fun little jovial conversations that we got to see that John was having. And so I think that perhaps that was another reason why Dan's name was being floated out there, because again, you give people any reason at all to vote you out by acting a certain way. And that might have been one of Dan's problems.
Yeah, well, and you did bring it up at exactly the right place, because we are moving into the sixth rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat.
Ta-da!
And we've already discussed a number of ways in which he has been seen as, you know, threatening the games of others. And yeah, in episode 7, he said he hadn't done anything to make anyone throw his name out there. So you've already mentioned one of the ways. Now let's count the other ways that he was wrong. He had a showmance and apparently tight duo. He had a known immunity idol. He was winning immunity and doing well in challenges. So that with yours, now we've got four reasons at least to be throwing his name out there. So yeah, he obviously had some threatening aspects.
Well, and you want to know why else he's an added threat? And this is something that we've talked about a little bit in past seasons, but the way that they now, and when I say they, how CBS is actually like hiding idols, it's not like they're just burying them anymore and you have to go look in a nook of a tree. They're like wrapping them in colorful rope. You know, they're putting them inside of coconut shells and painting on the outside of coconut shells. You know, there are new and creative methods that they're doing in order to hide these idols. So if you know what to look for, it helps you immensely to know how to continue to look for idols because, oh, so they're using this string, this colorful string. Now you know to look for colorful string. So I think that
because blue string doesn't occur naturally in Fiji.
Exactly.
As Christian told us. Maybe so, red and yellow, but not blue.
But not blue. So, but that I think is an added thing to consider that he's already found two idols. So clearly, and I know that there was a web confessional with Kara where she was like, I don't know how he's finding all these idols, but he's just finding all of these idols. Well, he also knows what to look for. And I think that that can be an added component to your threat level because it just can help you down the road.
Yeah. Honestly, I had not even thought of that particular aspect of things. I was looking more at, you know, well, was he a threat overall in the game more than some of the other Goliaths? Well, I'd say no, but well, some of the other Goliaths have shown a willingness to work with the Davids, which may have played some role in things. But there's also the question that Shannon Gates wondered about on Twitter, which is, what was Dan doing that was so bad that all his friends and even Kara wanted to turn on him, possibly to the detriment of their own games? We know that Kara said Dan felt like an anchor that was holding her back, but was that really enough? Well, Stephen noted in his blog that if you don't see a clear way to win on your current path, it makes sense to destabilize things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure that destabilizing things at this particular point would have been the right way to do it. But then again, the Goliaths did pull back on that plan after Kara revealed it to the Davids. And like other things I've mentioned before, I don't think it really contributed to Dan getting voted off. It just showed the overall feelings about him.
Yeah. And it is interesting to see at this point, you know, Kara kind of putting her foot down and saying, that's it. I can't play with this guy anymore. So there, I do feel like there has to be more actually happening there. And maybe she really is thinking long term. And how is my game going to play out if this guy is my number two? And the fact that he has not created any relationship with the Davids, and she has, and Alec has, and she's also working with Alec. So there, it might just be this idea of Goliath strong really, really kind of bit him in the butt.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. All right, we will move on to the seventh rule, which talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. Dan found two idols. Hey, that's great. He even played one correctly for himself. Good for him. Well, would have been. He said in a web confessional for this episode that he knew his name was on the chopping block because he knew that Carl could have gotten something from exile and was thinking if it's an extra vote, he could be toast. If it's an idol, same potential result. So he knew he had to play his own idol, and he was right about that. But there were just way too many problems.
Yeah.
I have to say that, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the podcast. Getting hit with the first ever idol nullifier must have felt horrible for Dan.
Oh, gosh, I can't. It has to have been horrifying. Because you really are, like, in that moment, you're like, yeah, good.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not.
As he said upon leaving the game, you think when you have an idol, you're golden. He played it correctly, and it should have been a moment of triumph for him.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, he was suddenly gone when he believed he was 100% safe heading into that tribal council. But whether or not anyone knew there was a new advantage in the game, the fact is that if he had followed his own advice and not told anyone else about the idol, he'd have been fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really that part that we talked about earlier with the, you have to know when to share that information. And, you know, you look at Davey, and again, Davey is a perfect example of someone who told no one until he absolutely had to, until he absolutely had to tell Christian, I've got an idol and I'm going to play it for you. But he didn't do it up until that point. Whereas Dan was, he might as well have just been wearing it around his neck the whole time.
Yeah. You know, back in the second episode, Dan said definitely too many people knew about his idol after he had told them about it. In a web confessional from the sixth episode, he said he learned from his first idol to keep the second a secret. And fast forward to episode seven, he told Kara about the second idol right away.
Right.
you know, if he had just listened to himself,
Yeah.
He'd have been much better off there. And what's funny is when I said that on Twitter while I was live tweeting this episode, Dan himself liked my tweet about it.
Yeah, he thought mine was a little cold.
Okay.
Yeah. I put a GIF out there that was representative of Dan. But it was all in good fun because, hi, I'm the girl that picked the rock, remember?
Yeah.
So it's all good.
Now, I originally thought that the Davids knew to aim the idol nullifier at Dan because while Kara didn't outright tell the Davids that Dan had an idol, we saw her on the show saying to several Davids that she wasn't sure if Dan had a second idol, and she suggested that they split the vote just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, if I'm out there and I hear this from his closest former ally, it screams Dan has an idol.
Yeah, because it's so weird to be having that conversation otherwise.
Right. Now, that would have been fine. But then I read Josh's interview with Nick, and Nick said that Mike told him that Dan had found the idol on Goliath Beach. So that's one. Then Christian believed Dan might also have found the Tiva idol because everyone but Dan wanted to have an idol search party at one point. And Dan was like, nah, I'm not into it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is exactly the kind of behavior a player cannot have when it comes to idols.
Yeah.
You might have already found it, but you still need to pretend that you didn't. Go off somewhere and rest. Who cares? Just let the others run around.
Or do what Ben did. Remember when he was being followed everywhere he went, even though he already had an idol he found within five minutes? And he
just
kept looking.
Them on.
Yeah. He kept looking everywhere to make them believe he didn't have one. That's great gameplay.
Yeah. And, then on top of all that, Nick also mentioned that when Dan played an idol for Angelina, he was sure that Dan would only have done that if he had two idols, which makes a lot of sense given the relationship between Dan and Angelina.
Yeah, that's true.
So that brings us back to the question of whether Dan did the right thing in playing his first idol for Angelina. Now, despite the eventual outcome for him, I would say yes. By doing so, he tried to save the Goliath numbers overall, and it would have theoretically taken some of the target off of himself, because while everyone knew about the first idol, he probably thought that nobody but Kara knew about the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, turns out he was wrong about that, as we just discussed, but it was still, I think, the right thing to do.
Yeah, and there was a good reason behind it. And I think part of his Goliath strong is what really caused him to play that idol, because he really believed in that Goliath strong mantra. And in order to maintain that, well, I'm going to play this idol for Angelina, even though she's not my favorite person, but she's a Goliath. And so I think that was part of what was leading him to do that. And I mean, he even talked to her about doing it, told her she would. He then questioned whether or not he should, and he still did. And I think it was because of that Goliath mentality.
Yeah. So overall, just to summarize this rule, since we've gone through a lot of stuff, Dan told too many people about the first idol, told one too many people about the second idol, and he also made the second idol too obvious to others who were paying attention to his behavior. So future players, take note.
Lots of notes.
Yes. All right. It is time to move on to Appendix A. And this appendix is about keeping your end goal in mind when voting. And a big part of this rule is that the tribe should, whenever possible, vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. As we mentioned last week, this time around the merge is when players should be voting out strong threats. And we saw it happen again this week, though I've already mentioned that he was, in my opinion, not as big a threat as some of the others overall. But once again, the Davids took out someone with whom they had never really strategized, someone who was one of the most vehement Goliath strong people, and it turns out, someone who had lied to the Davids about working together. So the Davids saw what was going on, and the Goliaths overall said they wanted to work with the Davids, but then obviously segregated themselves. And, you can't make it that obvious. Actions are more important than words.
It's interesting, though, that Dan is getting such guff about lying to the Davids when you have someone like Mike, who was like, we're in the strike force together. Forget about you. I'm Goliath Strong. Yeah. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that one.
I mean, maybe they thought, that there was a way to get back in good with Mike. Maybe Mike wasn't as clear to people like Nick about him being Goliath Strong as he is with the other Goliaths and in Web Confessionals. Whereas Dan, they knew exactly where he stood.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
So last week I mentioned that I thought Kara might have been a better target than John. And I'm going to say it again this week. If even the Goliaths wanted Dan out, why would the Davids go along with it? He was targeted in part because he was a threat, but he wasn't going to win out. And he would always have been there to get rid of. So once again, we saw Kara just kind of scoot on by.
Yeah, no, she really did. I mean, because if someone like Dan, who, if he's not strategizing, my God, then keep him around, you know, because he isn't going to be plotting against you in a way that is going to be super secret and you have to worry about. But Kara, that's a different story.
Yeah. I should mention, we have not mentioned Appendix B up to this point, which talks about the jury phase and what players should be doing, to kind of mold the jury. And that's because really I haven't seen it a lot, except from Angelina, of course, when, she tried to get her plug in with Elizabeth to start the jury there and was called out for it. But other than that, I don't think we've really seen much of that when voting out John and now Dan.
Well, there was that bing.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is true. Carl was making sure that he took credit.
Yes.
For the move he made. And what's interesting is Nick explained in the interview with Josh why he did the vote steal from Allison.
Yes.
And for anyone who hasn't seen that or already heard about it on another podcast, it was because if Dan didn't play his idol on himself, then the idol nullifier would have never been mentioned and Nick would have gotten all the credit for the move.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting and wow, such, strategic thinking on Nick's part.
And the fact too, that he thought that if he stole the vote from Allison, that Allison and he's the relationship that they have, he thought he would be able to mend fences and that she would understand, which I thought is also interesting that he really was thinking all the way through that. Your winner pick.
That's right. My winner pick.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So before I wrap up, do you have any final thoughts about Dan?
I do have a few. I do think that Dan played this game in a way that most people never actually do. And that's true to who they actually are. He didn't hide the fact that he was a cop, as we've seen in many, many years past, where usually people always hide the fact that they're cops. I mean, hell, he even reveled in it. I mean, he wore a shirt that had his agency's logo on it. You know, he didn't hide where he came from. He talked about being this, chubby kid and this chubby young adult. And now he's turned into hot cop. You know, he was a full on brochacho and he owned everything about himself and his game, including his showmances, his kryptonite, where he hid his idols. I mean, what he really lacked, I do think, was what John was able to do, and that was not call attention to himself. Even Dan, and I talked about this before, wondered why he was a target and John wasn't. And I just think that the biggest reason for his losing this game was he was really showing himself for who he was, very proudly and without hesitation, which was making him a very easy target because he had no secrets. And it allowed the nullifier to be used correctly. And unfortunately, it took Dan out of the game.
Yeah, Dan correctly played his idol and still ended up with a snuff torch. But things can change on Survivor. The best way to ensure you're not voted out is to use social and strategic connections, as Sandra mentioned on the recap podcast this week. Idols are great, but not being targeted at all is even better. Dan came into the game with the idea that he was not really going to scheme and plot. But as I've said, this is a game. He handcuffed himself and took away all of his own flexibility. Then he let his emotions get in the way, starting from the very first day, became a strong and visible showmance duo, and gave away too much information repeatedly. If that wasn't enough, he showed himself to be a challenge threat as well, and he had some problems with his social game. But those were lesser issues. It all circles back to the reason the first rule is the first rule. It's the most important. If you come into Survivor unwilling to actually play Survivor, especially in this era, you're not going to win. If you compound that problem by forgetting that everyone else out there is playing Survivor and looking for reasons to target you, it will draw attention that much more quickly while others slip by. Dan did all of these things and more, and that is why Dan lost.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! All right, so we have wrapped up the Thanksgiving week, and now it is time to look ahead, and we have to make not one, but two predictions.
I don't like it.
Yeah, well, got to do what you got to do.
I know. It's so crappy, though. I'm so bad at it.
Well, you know, I'm going to try. Well, the odds that I can duplicate what happened last week, very slim. Very slim.
You were right. You were right last week. Yeah, it's such a weird. Ugh, I don't know. It's 5-5.
Well, yeah, but okay, I'm going to try to read beyond the edit and look at the production schedule too. I think there's a reason that these two episodes are together, because usually, not always, but usually Survivor does that when there's a coherent story to be told in those two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the story is that the Davids stick together despite the Goliaths fracturing and trying to find cracks. Because, yeah, you said it. There are equal numbers of Davids and Goliaths now. But once the Goliaths no longer have an advantage, at least one of them will crack. And when I say the advantage, I, of course, mean the numbers advantage, not the pool of advantages that Davids had.
Hmm.
Because there's no way the Goliaths are going to rocks for people they hate.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. You know, so the Goliaths are going to be like rats fleeing a sinking ship. Mike even said in a web confessional for this episode that if the Goliaths didn't stay strong at this vote, it would be every Goliath for themselves. And, you know, the question is who will succeed and who will end up as a target. Well, following a pattern, two of the three people Nick has mentioned as having lied to the Davids are now gone. So I'm just going to go with it and say Kara will be next. She wasn't part of the now defunct strike force. She lied to them about Angelina, and now she may be viewed as having lied to them about targeting Dan, because she went over there, told them the plan, and then the plan changed while she was gone.
Yeah.
So I think she's next. Now, how that will happen, it's still a little bit up in the air, because Alec and Allison have both shown indications that they'd be willing to jump ship, and it's clear that Angelina would be willing to do anything. Plus, the Goliaths burned whatever shred of a bridge they still had with her in this tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to guess, and this goes down just beyond the prediction, I think the Davids will use Angelina and maybe Alec and Allison also for this vote. And we'll say goodbye to Kara. Then after that, I think another Goliath is going to be gone. I think that's why these are back to back. It's boom, boom, Goliath, Goliath. I think the Davids will, I guess, turn on Alec because he's too much of a challenge threat. And so I don't really have much more of a story on that one. I just think that that makes the most sense if they're going to go Goliath, Goliath. If Alec doesn't win, I think they got to get rid of him.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, so those are my predictions. Kara, then Alec. And then maybe the two of them will pose for a photo together or something.
You think?
Yeah.
I do like the Kara Alec prediction, although there's something, if we really are going to look at what Nick said about them being lied to, I mean, I still go back to the Mike issue. Like, I don't understand how Mike has been able to just kind of skate, considering he was part of this strike force. And then he was the one that really, like, brought it all down. I mean, if Angelina is going to turn on the Goliaths, as I believe she's going to, I think she's going to try to throw Mike under the bus that, you know, Christian was his idea and try to cause some problems with that. I think that Mike is, there's something about Mike that just, it makes me very curious. It makes me very curious, but I don't know. It's definitely not going to be Angelina or Allison. I mean, it's going to be Kara, Alec, and Mike. Some combination of those three. Two of them are going to go home.
No, you got to pick two and pick an order. Come on.
All right. I do think that Kara is going to have an issue with the whole lying thing, because clearly that bothered Nick. And I think it would almost be funny. And I say funny, but I don't mean funny. That she tried, like, in that tribal council to make it appear as if she was going along with the other plan and voting for Angelina. And then it's still, you know, and Dan ended up going home. So I feel like Kara is a good choice for the first half. I do like the idea of Alec also going home in the second half. But I feel like there's something about Mike that just keeps jumping out at me. So I'm going to go Kara and Mike.
Okay. All right. Keep riding that mic train. I was on that mic train earlier, and that didn't go anywhere for me.
I know you were, but I feel like he gets it too. Like he gets the game. He understands the game. Not that Alec doesn't, but I just feel like if anyone is going to be able to do something potentially sneaky, it would be Mike. Although Alec has been really good at that too.
Okay.
I don't know. That's what my thoughts are.
All right. Well, that brings us to time for a hashtag. And my suggestion is something I have said repeatedly already. Hashtag, this is a game.
Yeah, I like it. That's good.
All right. And of course, the hashtag for this podcast overall is hashtag YXLost. As we wrap up, I want to remind everyone about the RHAP patron program. You can head over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to help support all of the RHAP podcasts and also take a look at the various Patreon levels to find out what kind of perks you can get. Check out everything at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And of course, after you become a patron, and if you get to the Facebook group level, make sure to say hello to us there. Also, this podcast will probably be released on Cyber Monday. So if you're buying anything at Amazon, head over to the RHAP Amazon page at www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP. And you can find specific items related to the show and RHAP, or you can click from that page to do any other Amazon shopping. I know that I will be going through all the Cyber Monday sales on Amazon and, of course, going through the RHAP link. It doesn't cost you anything more, and it supports Rob Has a Podcast. That's www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP. And if you are, driving in a car now and you don't have a chance to write that down, you go to the Rob Has a Website page. You will find an Amazon banner somewhere, and you can click on that, and it has the same effect. So, other than that, make sure you're getting all the Survivor commentary you can handle by subscribing to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed. In both places, you can find great RHAP content like Know It Alls, The Wiggle Room, The B&B, and much more. So, besides talking to us in the Patreon Facebook group, you can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89, and I am at David Bloomberg. Make sure you follow both of us to see the whole conversation throughout the week.
You have to. David's very funny.
Ah, well, thank you. So is Jessica. As she said, she has all sorts of gifts and selfies and various other pictures.
Exactly.
So, thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all the editing on the Why Blank Lost podcast. Thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. And thanks to you, Jessica, for another great episode.
Well, thank you, David Bloomberg. I really enjoyed getting to hear Michelle for my season say, David, you're right. It's always a good little nugget, brings back a memory. And then it also is quite accurate. You were right this week. So we'll see what happens next week. Thank you again for listening, everyone. And you'll hear us again, or you'll at least hear David again.
Yeah. So I do want to mention that next week, Jessica will be neck deep in work and unable to cover the double episode. So I will have special guest Shannon Gates with me to talk about the two people who are voted out then. But don't worry, Jessica will be back a week after that, and she'll still be on Twitter as time allows it.
I will. I'm very, very sad, and I'm so sorry, but it's unfortunate. My real life is really taking over my existence.
I hate it when
right
real
now.
Life interferes with Survivor.
I know. It's so frustrating, but I got to do it. So hang in there. I will be back, but I'm sure Shannon will do a fabulous job.
Yes. So Shannon and I will see everyone in a week. Jessica, we'll see everyone in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.